right. A few things right here at the top of the show. First things first. I still haven't fixed this problem. I'm recording on my old AT2020 microphone. And my warm audio, nice microphone that I got a while back, it's been on the fritz for a while now. I need to either get it replaced or repaired, but it was going down for a while. I was recording a bunch of episodes in a row, and it was like cutting out in the middle of episodes, and it happened in a few previous episodes. You might have noticed there were a few sections where like I was having trouble with this microphone. In this interview, it was like the last leg of this microphone. For whatever reason, it would just like, it would work, and then it would just cut out, and my voice would dip all the way down. Because of that, I called the interview short, and I feel like we did get through. I would have re-recorded it with my guest, Erin, the food science babe. I would have re-recorded it with her, but I felt like I got through the gist of what I wanted to talk with her about. And she does such a nice job of, she was so well prepared, and she knows her business very well. So I just sort of left it as is. It's just a short episode now, but that's why, is it's like I was having this microphone trouble, this technical issue, and that's why. Also, I am just going to be referring to her as Erin, the food science babe, because she has requested that I just use the first name. As you know, some of my guests that I have on this show sometimes, even though they're very public and they have a very big platform on social media, they prefer to keep certain details still private about themselves, their full name, because they have people who get very mad at them about the things that they say. This person, it doesn't sound like she's saying anything in the public eye that is all that controversial, but she's got people who are like bent out of shape about the information that she's sharing. And I think that's sort of the crux of what we're talking about today, is like food panic. She got her screen name, and I think she talks a little bit about this in the interview, but she got her handle, the food science babe. It was a response to a very popular Instagrammer named the food babe, who was sort of this person who was kind of spreading a lot of fear and panic around what's in your food, what's in the food that you're feeding to your kids. And I feel like this issue is very similar to the kind of misinformation that you see in the anti-vax conversation. You've got all these people looking up the ingredients of what's in the vaccine, or what's in peanut butter, or what's in, you know, applesauce or mayonnaise or whatever. They're reading these ingredients, and they sort of are drawing conclusions without an actual academic basis or scientific understanding of the ingredients that they're reading, or how those ingredients are incorporated into that thing. They might look up, what is this thing? And they look it up and they're like, oh my God, this thing is used in battery acid, or this thing is also used in, you know, washer fluid for your car. That can't be healthy to ingest. But they don't actually know the process or the proportions of the thing. They don't actually know why that thing is there, what happens to that thing on a chemistry level, when it gets mixed with another thing. That's, you know, like, they don't have the scientific acumen to be spreading the misinformation and the panic that they're spreading. And that's what food science babes does. I didn't even know like that a food scientist was a thing, or that food science was a thing, or that food chemistry was a thing, food engineering was a thing. And that's what Erin does. I'm just going to read you some definitions of what this stuff is, just so that we're all on the same page and have a base level understanding of what we're talking about. So what is food science? Food science is the basic science and applied science of food. Its scope starts at overlap with agricultural science and nutritional science, and leads through the scientific aspects of food safety and food processing, informing the development of food technology. Did you catch all that? It's just basically the science of how our food, the food that we eat, is developed. It's people who study the science of and developing food technology so that we, you know, make the food that we make. You hear about like processed foods and foods that go that are made in a lab. A lot of our food is, but that's the science of that. That is what food science is. And what a food scientist does is a food scientist studies the deterioration and processing of foods by using microbiology, engineering, and chemistry. They determine nutrient levels of food by analyzing its content. They look for new nutritional food sources and investigate avenues for making processed foods taste good, safe, and healthy. They also find the best way to distribute, process, preserve, and package the food. So this is what a food scientist does. Utilizing food scientists, utilizing microbiology and a study of the way that foods deteriorate and break down, they come up with all the systems of what's the best way to process it so that it can be preserved and packaged. What's the safest way to make it taste good and make it, you know, a fun, nice thing to eat? This is what food scientist does, and also what a food engineer does. A food engineer, in that same vein, this is the definition of the job of food engineer. Food engineers design and develop systems for production, processing, distributing, and storing food and agricultural materials. Applications include food safety and quality, biorefining, pharmaceuticals, and environmentally friendly packaging. So, yeah, okay, so this is what we're talking about, is a person who actually works in this field, who actually has an intimate understanding of how food is developed, what they're basing that on, and she's going out here trying to inform people who are freaking out about, oh my god, I found out that there's this scary-sounding thing that's in peanut butter. And she's just trying to let people know, hey, there's a reason why we don't have millions of kids across the world every year dying from, like, this chemical reaction to this thing that's in peanut butter. Like, because we scientifically engineer it to be safe to eat. And there's a lot of people on the internet who don't actually have the food science background that my guest has today, who are just, like, looking at ingredients on the back of a bottle or something and going, oh my god, that's so scary, and kind of finding an avenue into having watchable content, and probably also people who are trying to sell multi-level marketing products and things like that. Like, well, don't buy this store-bought product, buy my thing that's actually safe and doesn't have any GMOs or anything like that, you know. And man, the fear-mongering works. It's a successful model. It reminds me a lot of the vaccine conversation, and I, you know, down to the point that people are, like, angry and vitriolic about it, and that's why my guest has to keep her name and her details private. It's like, there are people who are mad about the fact that she's just saying, hey, I developed this stuff, and it is actually safe for you to consume. And, you know, it really is like the vaccine. It's like, well, why don't you go talk to a person who worked in the lab who developed the vaccine? Why don't you talk to people who actually are virologists and are medical scientists and ask them about the vaccine instead of people who talk to someone who talked to someone, or someone who, you know, someone who did their own research. This whole kind of thing. Unqualified people who did their own research. Just talk to someone who's actually in the field. So that's what we're doing today. We're talking to an actual food scientist about whether or not the food that you're eating, the food that you may probably have in your pantry right now, whether or not that food is actually secretly a dangerous thing that's going to kill you. That's the show today. From a Blankenfort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to Aaron, the food science babe, about food. So now you're doing consulting and stuff like that. Like, what exactly, I mean, what would you say drives you in this field? Like, what if you had to package, like, your message or what you're trying to get across, especially with the internet content and trying to inform sort of the public? Is it just doing experiments, or are you trying to help people to find maybe the healthiest food, or just unpackage myths that maybe they've heard or believed and get to the bottom of that?
Yeah, so the reason why I really started my page was just because There is so much misinformation just regarding food on social media, just online in general. And, I even used to believe a lot of these things, before I worked in the food industry and even during working in the food industry, just as far as like thinking organic was healthier and not really understanding what GMO means. I started just realizing like there wasn't really very many accounts kind of like explaining the science behind these things, and instead of scaring consumers and just a lot of the marketing, even at companies I've worked at, it's like the typically the target market for what I call like these fear-based marketing labels, a lot of times is moms of young children. I really started realizing that too when I had my daughter, and I was just like, gosh, so much of this marketing is being targeted towards moms of young children. It's like, specifically organic and, feeling guilty for, if you can't afford organic or the most natural thing out there. And so it was just really bothering me that there wasn't, someone out there necessarily like just giving science-based information so that people can make choices based on actual like facts and science versus being scared into purchasing things just because they think they're, poisoning their children if they're not buying the organic version. So that's really why I kind of started it. I just, there's so many accounts out there just spreading, false information. And so I was like, I'm just gonna start a page. And I had no idea what it, if it would even turn into anything. Yeah, that's just kind of the perspective I was coming from. And, just working in the food industry as well, like I knew a lot of the stuff they were saying was false. Like a lot of the people that have pages like that have never worked in the food industry. They don't really know what they're talking about.
And like what
So it
specifically, like what are some of the more common things that people will say that you're like, that's just not true, that you feel like they're maybe pushing a narrative to try to sell an alternative product or something? Like what are some of the more common myths out there?
Yeah, just like scaring people about conventional food in general. So the EWG, which is the Environmental Working Group, they're an organization that a lot of people think they're like a legit organization that gives, science-based information, but they're funded by the organic industry. They're the ones that come out with the Dirty Dozen list every spring, which you don't need to be afraid of pesticide residues on foods. And they just, scare people basically about conventional or, if it's somebody selling supplements, or foods or whatever, like a lot of it is just fear-based things that they're pushing to either like sell a book or to sell like a nutrition course. Or so my name, Food Science Babe, is based off of Food Babe, who is somebody who spreads a lot of misinformation, which is why I named myself Food Science Babe. So Food Babe has been around for a really long time. She has never worked in the food industry. She has no relevant degree or anything. And so she spreads a ton of misinformation to sell books, to sell, she sells like supplements now. And so a lot of it stems from like her blogs and stuff like that.
It reminds me a lot of the people who are spreading misinformation around COVID and around like vaccine safety and stuff like that, who you almost always find out are involved in selling some kind of multi-level marketing, alternative medicine, where they're like, no, don't buy medicine. Don't take the medicine from the corrupt medical professionals who develop, like, you don't want their poisonous jab. You need to come and buy my all organic, healthy alternative.
Yeah. Which is just one of the ironic things because like I don't make any money from my page as far as like, I'm not set, I'm not, I have like a merch store, but other than that, like I'm not selling something or like being sponsored by like a food company. And it's just kind of funny to me because that always gets brought up, like, people calling me like a shill for the food industry when in reality, these people that are spreading the misinformation are actually like making money off of spreading misinformation because they're selling books, selling supplements. And so it's just kind of funny because it's like, well, no, they're actually the ones that are like using all of this to like make money off of their stuff. So yeah.
It's kind of wild how similar it is because it's the same thing. It's like, well, these doctors are just trying, they're in the pocket of big pharma. They're trying to sell you these medications. It's like, no, like they're not making any money off the vaccine. They're not making, right. The vaccine's also available to you for free. They're not trying to sell it to you. But it's so similar. And then it's all the people that are telling you that they're in the pocket of Big Pharma are actually people who are trying to sell you stuff.
Yeah. It's the same. I mean, people say I'm like sponsored by like Big Food or whatever. And it's like, what, like, first of all, what does that even mean? But like, second of all, no, I mean, I spend a lot of time doing this just because I think it's important. I'm not doing it to, you know, I have my consulting where I make money. Like this isn't what I do to make money. So yeah, it's just so ironic because it's like, that's not true at all. I'm just giving people factual information.
Well, and the food industry, I mean, this whole, the whole organic food thing, it's not that like organic food is necessarily bad for you or anything. It's just that it's kind of a racket. It's this racket where you convince people that the food that they're eating that's less expensive is bad for them, and you need to come and pay premium prices and get the good stuff, the pure stuff, the stuff that doesn't have the pesticides, that doesn't have the GMO, non-GMO. Like, this is the good stuff. But it always costs extremely more. Like, there's a reason why people call Whole Foods Whole Paycheck, and it's this sort of classist barrier to like, well, if you want to afford to eat healthy food, you need to make more money. And you get terms like food desert and stuff like that. I find it interesting on your page that you're not just trying to push specific brands or like quote unquote healthier food or healthier brands. Like, you're trying to get to the bottom of the facts on just everyday brands that most people have in their homes.
So that is, I mean, that is the, you know, the, so in order to get people to pay more for a product, which organic typically is more, you know, they have to think that it's better in some way. So that's the way that the organic industry has positioned it. Like, you know, it's pesticide free, which it's not. It's healthier, which it's not. So these things are all marketing things, because otherwise, why would someone pay more for it? You know, there has to be a perceived benefit, which, you know, like I always say, if somebody wants to buy organic, that's fine. Like, it's our entire food supply is very safe. And so, you know, if you want to buy organic, that's fine. But yeah, just like you said, the whole issue with it is that it does, you know, in some cases cause harm. And so, you know, one of the examples that I use is that Dirty Dozen list. They've actually done studies, you know, with low income populations, and they end up just buying less fruits and vegetables overall because of this misinformation about conventional having, you know, it is just being covered in pesticides, which isn't true. So, you know, if that's all they have access to, you know, whether it's they don't have organic in their store or they do have organic in their store and they just can't afford it, you know, they're being afraid of what they can afford, which is conventional. And then they're just purchasing less fruits and vegetables overall, which most Americans aren't getting enough servings of those to begin with. And so, you know, it's more negatively impacting low income populations. Whereas, you know, if somebody that has enough money to purchase organic and they are being scared over conventional and they can buy organic, it's like, okay, fine, whatever. I'm still going to buy fruits and vegetables, but it's negatively impacting these people that can't afford it. And we shouldn't be afraid of fruits and vegetables, whether they're conventional or organic. And so that's the big issue that I have with it, in which I try to communicate, like, not only is this misinformation, but like, this is why this misinformation is harmful too. You know, it's not just like, oh, big deal, they're spreading misinformation, so people buy organic, like, big deal. It's like, it is creating harm. So that's a huge issue with it that I think a lot of people might not even really understand that that's happening. So, I've posted a lot about that aspect of it too.
What is your process like for how you, you know, as a food scientist, for how you determine, the health value or health benefits of a certain product or certain food. You know, like more or less like, why should the average consumer trust you over food, babe? Like what goes when you say, oh, that food's not necessarily more healthy than conventional. It's not actually more healthy. It's not. How do you actually measure that? What is the process like from a food science perspective?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing between me and her is like, I back up everything I say with peer-reviewed studies. So, you know, there's overwhelming evidence now that shows that organic is not nutritionally superior to conventional. You know, these are things that are, there's, you know, large studies that have been done to determine these things. So, you know, whenever I am making claims like that, like I'm always citing references so people can, you know, like I would never, that's the thing too. Like I never use an appeal to authority argument. I never say like, I'm a food scientist, so you should just trust me. Like I've literally never said that on my page. If I make a claim, I back it up with evidence. If somebody wants to argue it, you know, it's like, that's a huge difference between me and her too. Like if somebody disagrees with her, she'll just immediately block you. Like there's actually a Facebook page called Banned by Food Babe because thousands of people have been banned by her because she doesn't, it's like, if you disagree, she just blocks you. Like there's no debate. There's no like, let me explain this to you, which I really try to, like, if you look at the comment section on any of my posts, like I'm, you know, responding to people, I'm explaining things to people. Like if somebody says, well, I don't agree with this, I'm like, okay, like post your sources, because it isn't just about like, trust me, I'm a food scientist. Like I'm always open to, I don't know everything. And so if there is new research, you know, it's like, cite it for me so I can take a look at it. So, I mean, that is the biggest thing just between like science communicators in general. They post sources, they respond to people. They don't just block if you don't agree with them. They'll ask you for sources. So just in general, I think that's a good thing to look out for when you are, you know, kind of sifting through information online to kind of, you know, like, are they backing their claims with actual evidence? You know, are they just stating opinions and then blocking anyone that disagrees with it? I mean, that's just a huge difference between people spreading misinformation and actual science communicators.
And how does that go for you, by the way? It's very noble of you to try to answer questions in the comments. I try to do that too, or at least I think I was more active in my comments when my audience was smaller. And the more it grew, the more I found that it was kind of exhausting spiritually and emotionally to try to have those conversations in the comments. And do you ever get kind of bogged down when you feel like you're explaining something as clear as you can possibly explain it and they're still not getting it?
Well, yeah, like pretty much on a daily basis. yeah, so that's one thing I've really had to like work on too, because like I get so caught up in like trying to get people to understand it, and it like bothers me when they don't. So I have had to learn to just like let it go. Or, you know, like I can kind of tell now, I've done, you know, I, like you said, when you kind of get more followers, it's really hard to, you know, respond to everything, but I can kind of tell now when somebody's asking a question to actually learn versus asking a question and not really asking a question. Like you can kind of tell after a while. It's like,
yeah, you can tell who's actually, yes, you can tell who's trying to engage in sincere discourse and who's just coming in hot, trying to expose you. Like, oh, I'm gonna, you didn't know this. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I'll just like, yeah, I'll stop responding if I'm like, okay, they're not even attempting to learn. But yeah, I mean, a lot of times there are people that are just like, I truly don't understand this. Can you help me understand it? And it's like, yeah, definitely. I'll try to explain it. And I have like highlights on my Instagram page too, where I have tried to organize things, you know, frequently asked questions. So I have, you know, resources and information in those highlights too, that I always refer back to as well.
Yeah. I got to say, the one thing so far that Food Babe and I have in common is that I do block people from time to time who are like what you're talking about. When someone comes in and they're being combative and it doesn't look like they're actually trying to have a conversation or trying to learn. I block those people also because I'm afraid that they're going to be the kind of person that will report my account and get my account taken away.
Yeah, I'm not saying I never block people. I definitely do. But, you know, like I won't just do it like if they comment once and they disagree, which she tends to do. But yeah, I definitely have blocked people for sure.
And it's just because you're like, well, sometimes people seem dangerous and sometimes you're like, I don't. Yeah. And sometimes you never know who's going to be the kind of person who's going to try to report you for spreading disinformation or, you know, and then Instagram doesn't really have a great way of actually evaluating which reports are legitimate and which ones aren't. And most social media platforms aren't very good about actually checking into claims and stuff like that, which is a whole other topic. But I'm sure, you feel sort of the same way that as your audience grows, there's only so much bandwidth you have for those kinds of conversations in the comments. Yeah. And sometimes when you've explained something 100 times, it feels like, and someone asks that question again, it can even be hard to respond to people who seem to be sincere.
Right. And like the other thing too, is I don't want my comment section to be a place for people to spread more misinformation too. So like if somebody is just like commenting over and over, like just completely false things, it's like, I don't want people to read that and believe it when it's false. So yeah, if it's like, you're not interested in learning, you just keep commenting like false things. Like I don't want that to be spread in my comment section. So there are definitely times where I block people too. So.
And I relate. I totally know what you're talking about. Sometimes people are just saying something. They're not even talking to me. Sometimes they're arguing with someone else in my comments and they say something that's so vitriolic or hateful that I just am like, oh yeah, you're gone. It's just sort of a behavioral intolerance where I just say, yeah, none of that. If you were to outline what in your opinion constitutes a healthy diet for the average person today, what would that look like to you?
So I'm not a dietitian. I try to leave that up to dietitians, which is why I share a lot of, that like nutritional type of stuff with, you know, I have a lot of pages of dietitians that I follow that I'll share their stuff. It's difficult. I think that is a one-on-one conversation you have with a dietitian. If it is something that you want to get help with, I mean, nutrition is so individual, based on activity level, based on just a lot of different things. So that's one thing I try to do too. Like I try not to make blanket statements and like generalize. Again, and also I'm not a dietitian too, so that's really not my place to kind of communicate. There's a lot of great dietitians that are, you know, on Instagram, even on TikTok now. So I try to share their content when it gets sort of into that realm of like dietetics and nutrition and stuff like that.
I guess what I mean is like, is it okay that my diet is like 75% bread, meat, and cheese? Or should I mix it up more?
I think the biggest thing is just like, I think people are too concerned about like little like additives and like, you know, should I avoid this ingredient? Should I avoid this additive? When in reality, it's like, it's going to have more to do with like your overall diet. Like, are you eating enough fruits and vegetables? I mean, like that's one of the biggest things too. It's like, I feel like these really, really, really tiny risks just get blown out of proportion. It's like, oh, I don't eat anything with this list of ingredients. And it's like, well, that's not really making your diet like healthy or unhealthy. I think it's more looking at your diet overall, just making sure like I said, you're getting enough fruits and vegetables. I think that's one of the biggest things. Like a lot of times, you know, on my page, it's like, oh, what ingredients do you avoid? And I'm like, nothing specifically. Like I don't think that's necessarily like healthy to, I used to have a pretty disordered relationship with food. When I would say 10, 15 years ago, when I, you know, kind of got caught up in the whole like clean eating thing. And there was like a long list of foods that I wouldn't eat because I thought they were bad. And it's like my diet then was, and just my mindset overall was way worse than it is now, where it's like, I understand that like every food can fit in my diet if I want it to. So I think, you know, just in general, like excluding things or just the false dichotomy of like, this food is good, this food is bad. Like, it's like, nothing is bad. You can fit it into an overall healthy diet, which is something I kind of reiterate a lot just because I have sort of fallen into that in the past, and it can be very, you know, detrimental, not only to your, you know, health, but like just your mental health too. So yeah.
Have you heard of the idea of intuitive eating?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think that's a great, I think that is a really good movement. I share a lot of stuff from like intuitive eating dietitians. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good thing to move towards, kind of like, it's, you know, kind of like the anti-diet culture type of stuff. And
yeah,
I think it's just good to understand and learn, like, you know, that, yeah, like I said, every food can fit. Foods aren't like good and bad. You don't have to specifically avoid a list of ingredients that somebody tells you is bad. Like I said, that can lead to disordered eating, which is obviously not good for you either. So yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend who does a lot of work on kind of dismantling fat phobia and confronting diet culture and stuff. It's been interesting to follow her journey and sort of the things that she's discovering about intuitive eating. And I like that idea of like not assigning moral or ethical value to food, which if you really think about it, just doesn't make any sense. But people get really caught up in that there's, and it leads to all kinds of, I think, disordered thinking, that there's like some kind of conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing too. It's like, nothing. It's like, as food scientists, like, we're eating the same food you're eating. We're not just like making poisonous food for fun. Like it just, there's so many things that just don't even make any sense. Like we're eating the foods that we make. And yeah, like you said, like assigning moral value to food, it is a whole thing that just makes you feel bad if you eat something that you have deemed bad. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's just like kind of a cycle of like, oh, now I feel bad for eating that. And so I think it's important to just give people factual info, and then they can make choices based on that versus like, I'm afraid of this ingredient because I heard it's toxic or whatever. And it's like, our food is safe. There's not going to be an ingredient that's like, you eat something and it's like literally a toxic amount. Like that just, that's not a thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, that's all my questions anyway. Like we got through it. I want people to check you out. They can follow you on Instagram, right?
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Food Science Babe.
Food Science Babe, are there any like periods or anything in there, or is it just all one word?
Just one word.
And they can, okay, great. And they can find you on the same handle on all that stuff.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Well, I really appreciate the work you're doing out there and appreciate you. I think that there's a nice overlap and intersectionality of like different good movements and what you're doing right now and making sure that people aren't living in fear of just the food that they're eating as though there's some that's poison and some that's not. And when, you know, in reality, it's food.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So I appreciate you. You doing that and taking the time to come chat and,
sure.
Yeah. All right. We'll keep it up.
Me.
Yeah, of course.
Yep.
Have a good one. We'll chat to you later.
You too.
Okay. What did I just say? I said, we'll chat to you later. Did you hear me just say that? We'll chat to you later. Dude, sometimes I listen back to this show and I'm just like, what? I'm mostly comfortable at it now at like 98, 99 episodes in, whatever it is now. But geez, sometimes I listen back and I'm like, what the hell was that? We'll chat to you later. Ugh. All right, so if you're not already following her, you can follow Erin at Food Science Babe, all one word, Food Science Babe on Instagram. She's very popular, and she's out here doing good work. So follow her, and it'll help you eat more securely and feel better about the things that you're choosing to eat. I hope that was informative and useful, and thanks for being here. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or by going to Apple Music or Spotify, searching Austin Archer. My music and this podcast are mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. Go to themarmalademusic.com. Tell Chris that you love his work over here on People Pleaser. He's going to give you 20% off your first project. It's the best deal around. Themarmalademusic.com. Tell Chris that I sent you for 20% off of your audio project if you want to work with Chris, and you should. I'm on Cameo, okay? Here's something that's new. There's patreon.com/AustinArcher. You can always join Patreon, and you should if you can and if you want to. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. But something new that might be fun for the holidays, I'm on Cameo, and I'm embarrassed about it, just like I'm embarrassed about a lot of things that I do. But I'm on Cameo. Cameo, if you don't know, it's this app that, like, celebrities are on, and people can hire celebrities to make a video saying, like, hi, so-and-so, happy birthday. They'll get it for their friends. Say you have a friend that's a big fan of Chris Evans, you know, Captain America, and you want to pay Chris Evans $500 to say happy birthday to your friend. Chris Evans might jump on his cell phone and say happy birthday to your friend and make $500. And that's what Cameo is. They've been asking me for a while. They've had some representatives who have been emailing me, and they've been saying, hey, come get on Cameo. We think you would do well over there. I've been like, no one gives a shit if I'm on Cameo. No one cares, and no one wants to have a Cameo of me. But they were like insisting about it, and I just finally did it. I've already had a couple people order a Cameo from me. My Cameos are not $500 like Chris Evans are. Mine are much, 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 much more affordable, for the low, low cost of like $25. If it's something that sounds like a fun, unique, original Christmas present idea, if you have a friend, or if you yourself are a person who thinks that would be fun to have, you can have that now, you know? Even if you just want to do it as like a prank gift, like say you have a friend who has no idea who I am, just get him a Cameo from me as a joke. That could be funny. You know, you can do that now. I'm on Cameo. Look me up. Austin Archer. I think I'm on there as Your Pal Austin, but I'm sure if you typed in Austin Archer too, you would find me on Cameo if you want to do that. Okay. There's all my plugs. Thanks again to my guests today. Thanks to you all for being here. All right. See you next week. Love you. Bye-bye.